And it's sort of interesting that the title of this sermon is Fear of Loss. And the idea of loss of notes, they'll be on the website, I'm sure. And I don't know, maybe Charles will work his magic. He does very awesome things sometimes that astounds the mind. But anyway, so we're talking about the fear of, or I'll be talking with you about the fear of loss. Our passage today is Luke 12, 16 to 34. So if you want to put your little thumbs there, and there'll be a lot of scripture that I'll be reading today. So hopefully that's all right. And if it's not, too bad. Lord, I thank you that you do give us a roadmap, that you do give us a plan, that you love us, that you guide us, and that you teach us through many things, through many people, through your word. And I pray that as we are guided by you, that we would have an ear to hear you and an eye to see where you are leading, and that we would have courage to obey. So, fear of loss. In Luke 12, verse 16 to 21, I'm going to read that. This is a parable that Jesus says. He says, "The ground of a certain rich man yielded plentiful. And he thought to himself, what should I do? Because I have so many crops, I don't know where to put them. So he says to himself, I'm going to tear down my barns and storehouses and make new ones, bigger ones, so I can take in everything that I have received. And he says, I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take it easy, eat, drink, and be merry. But then God says to him, you fool, this night your soul will be required of you. And those things which you have provided will be gone. So he who lays up treasure for himself, so is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God." A lot of times we'll be thinking about our own way. We'll be thinking about the things that will give us benefit, will keep us secure, will keep us safe. We do that because it is prudent, but we may also do that because of a fear of loss of control. We succeed. We build our portfolio. We find our security, but then we fail. There's nothing wrong with building security or even wealth, but what is our motivation? Why are we doing the things that we do? Why are we building this security? Is it for ourselves? Is it for those we love? Is God directing us to do it? We like control. We like stability. We want to be able to depend on things, and we want them to go our way. But what happens when things don't go our way? What happens when we don't have control? What happens when we lose? Fear of loss. What are some things that you are afraid to lose? I know for me, I can be afraid to lose relationships. I can be afraid to lose security. I can be afraid to lose control, influence, happiness, peace. You know, it's interesting. There's a lot of differing opinions in the world, a lot of different ideas that are in conflict with each other, and they may not be ideas that are Christian and non-Christian. They could be just simply in that realm of preference. And I know with social media, where it looks like we have a voice to speak to hundreds or even thousands, I guess. And I know that at times I have wanted to project my voice, my thoughts, my solutions out there. And maybe I'll say something, maybe I'll think about it for an hour or two, and I'll put it out there and wait. No likes, no comments, just the occasional question mark, question mark, question mark. Fear of loss of influence, fear of not being heard or understood. Jesus was not always understood. People would not let Jesus influence their lives. But in that situation, in that scenario, who is it that is losing out? Fear of loss. Fear of rejection. Fear that we're not good enough. Unfortunately, the truth is, and you've heard it a couple weeks ago, you're not good enough. We're all losers. We're all people that don't make it on our own. The man in the parable built things for himself to give him security, and he had rest and a false sense of peace. And then his life was over, and all that he had gained didn't bring him anything. Didn't bring him that control that he wanted. Didn't bring him that ultimate peace. Although we may not admit it, I think that maybe some of us believe that we have no fate but what we make for ourselves. The idea that we create our own destiny, that we have this control, and in a sense we do, and that's what happened in the Garden of Eden. God gave us the choice. Do you obey me? And don't worry about knowing between good and evil and just trusting. Or do you want to make your own decision? Do you want to be the one who determines what you think is good or bad for you? And ever since we took that fruit, and I say we because honestly I think we all, being the human condition, we all would have chosen that. I believe that Adam and Eve were the prime example of the best that we could be. So I think all of us in that situation would have chosen to decide for ourselves. Because maybe we felt the fear of loss of control. And we wanted to decide for ourselves because of a lack of trust in God. So in that sense, we started to make our own fate. We want things to go our way, and we'll do great, and we'll go to great lengths to make that happen. We may want to believe something that isn't really true. We may take sides in a war that is of our own making. We may compromise our values for some sort of false unity. We create our own God instead of following the one that we already have. You know, talking about the garden, talking about making our own choices, I think that we do make a God that is in our own image, and we don't realize it. We see the God that asks us to sacrifice, the God that asks us to trust, to believe, to lose. And that's inconvenient. And we find ourselves telling ourselves, God wouldn't do that. He wouldn't ask that of me. When in the Bible, his word, those examples, he has asked many people that follow him to give up many things. But we fear that loss. We fear that he would take something away from us that we think is good for us, that we want to have. Maybe even things that we know are bad for us, but we still pursue them for reasons unknown. Maybe because we want to maintain that control. At least I have control. And I think that's where Satan lives. In that sense that he knows he's going to lose. He knows he's going to fail. He knows he doesn't make the cut. That he can't get all that he wants. But at least where he's at, he has some sort of control. Even if that control is heading down a mountain into the fiery furnace. I had a few quotes on here that I was looking at as I was reading through. One of the quotes is, "A person often meets his destiny on the road he took to avoid it." It's a French poet, Jean de La Fontaine. And I think that we see that. I think that we maybe were so wanting unity and so wanting people to just agree instead of fighting all the time that we turn into this person that accepts anything, false doctrine. What's true for you is true for you, and what's true for me is true for me, and we can coexist together, but eventually that comes to nothing. Or maybe you decide that we need to separate, we need to cleanse, we need to keep these people from taking control. We need to make sure that we have just our little group and we don't bring anyone else in. If they have views that are different than ours, we totally reject them, we push them away, we don't want them here, we don't want them in our lives at all. And then we watch as our community begins to fracture and fracture and fracture. Jesus, he was so different than all of us. His morals and values were so much better than all of us. And yet, what did he do? He came. He sat with the tax collector, the sinner, the dregs of society, and spoke with them. He didn't become like them. He didn't accept the sin. He didn't say, hey, this is all right. Do what you want to do. But he came to them. He spoke with them. He invested himself in them. And Julius Caesar, William Shakespeare said, "The fault, dear Brutus, is not in the stars, but in ourselves, that we are underlings." So many times we want to blame these outside forces. They did it. They caused me this pain. If only they would do what they're supposed to. Well, you can't control anyone else, but you can control, at least to some degree, yourself. But we're broken. We're losers. And the fault is in ourselves. Another quote, "Fanaticism consists of redoubling your effort when you have forgotten your aim," by George Santayana. The idea of us being so convinced that we're right and no longer evaluating if we really are right or not, we're just convinced and we have to maintain this idea that we've held on to. And we continue and we continue and we continue making people try to agree with us and to follow us and to do what we have found should be the best thing without reevaluating and say, did God lead me here? Is this what he wants for me? Is this how he is guiding me? It's hard being wrong. We've all been there. We've all seen it. I don't know how many, I don't want to say a lot, but there's been times where I have believed something and knew it to be true at the time, and then did research and more research and more research and found that none of the research was coming to the conclusion that I thought was the right conclusion. And then I began to realize, you know what? I misunderstood. It's that part in the conversation that you're having and you realize that you misunderstood what the question was, and you're arguing and you're so dogmatic about what you're believing, and then you're like, oh, how do I save face here? How do I stop from losing respect? Fear of losing. Sometimes we always have to be humble to come to God and to reevaluate and to ask him, where are you leading me? Sometimes he has us move in a different direction. Sometimes he has us do these things that he wants for us. Maybe there's a certain cause, feeding the homeless or what have you, and he has you invest in that for a season. And then there's a time where he wants you to invest in something else. Be open to where God is leading. Don't be afraid of loss of influence, loss of what you know and are comfortable with. James 4, 1 through 10, and I'll summarize. It says, where do wars and fights come from? They come from your desires. They come from us inside. We want these things that we can't have, that we shouldn't have. And so we claw and we scratch for them, and ultimately we lose. We try to build on our own pleasures and then make ourselves an enemy of God. It says that God resists the proud but gives grace to the humble. Submit to God. Resist the devil. He'll flee from you. Draw near to God. He'll draw near to you. Don't be double-minded. Purify your hearts. Humble yourselves, and he will lift you up. I talked about peace earlier, the fear of losing peace, or what we strive for is to find peace. John 14, 27 says, peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you, not as the world gives to you. Do not let your heart be troubled, nor let it be afraid. God doesn't need our plans. He doesn't want us to save him. He wants us to follow him to be something better than we are. So many times I see it in my own life, in my own thoughts of, oh, gosh, you know, how do I save face? No, not me saving face. How do I make God look better in this situation? And when you say that out loud, when you think about that, how do I make God look better in this situation? We are his representatives here. We don't have to help him out. We have to follow him. We have to see where he is leading. Romans 6, 1 through 14. What shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? No. If you died in sin, how can you stay there? Don't you know that you were baptized into his death? If we have been united together in the likeness of his death, certainly we also shall be in the likeness of his resurrection. Knowing this, that our old man was crucified with him, that the body of sin might be done away with, that we should no longer be slaves to sin. For he who has died or has committed himself to Christ, has given up our own way, has been freed from sin. Now, if we died with Christ, we believe that we shall also live with him. Knowing that Christ, having been raised from the dead, dies no more. Death no longer has dominion over him. For the death he died to sin once for all. But the life he lives to God. Are you wanting to lose? Are you wanting to follow that life of sin that leads to death, and death is the ultimate loss? Or are you following Christ in a life that leads to life, to living, to succeeding, to winning, to being with him? Do not present who you are as an instrument of unrighteousness to sin, but be alive to God. Be an instrument of righteousness. Sin doesn't have to have dominion over you. You are not under the law, but under grace. You're not under the law, but under grace. A lot of times, and this happened in the Old Testament, there were extra laws that the religious leaders put on the people. And there's a lot of laws that we put on our lives. Maybe we follow different organizations and we add to who Christ is, and we subtract some things that aren't convenient to whatever group we are following. And we have all these rules, and oh, a Christian doesn't vote this way, or a Christian doesn't do this thing, or a Christian doesn't, and it's things that God has not said, and it's things that Jesus is not leading us into. He will take care of us. The second part of our main verse, Luke chapter 12, 22 to 34. And this is the fear that we have, is that we won't be taken care of. But Jesus says that he will take care of us. He said to his disciples, "Therefore I say to you, don't worry about your life, what you will eat, not about your body, what you will put on. Life, it's more than food. The body, it's more than clothing. Consider the ravens. They neither sow nor reap. They have neither storehouse nor barn. God feeds them. How much more valuable are you than birds? And which of you, by worrying, can add one cubit to its stature?" Like, even our best efforts don't get us anywhere. If you then are not able to do the least, why are you anxious for the rest? That whole idea of us following our own fate, creating our own security, it's continually grasping for the wind, and it causes us anxiety, and it causes us to make sacrifices that we don't need to make, moral sacrifices that God doesn't want us to. But I have to succeed. But I have to follow this through until the end. If God didn't lead you there, you can step out. Consider the lilies, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. Yet I say to you, even Solomon in all of his glory was not arrayed like one of these. Have faith. Don't seek what you should eat or drink or have an anxious mind. For all these things the nations of the world look for. But your Father knows what you need. Seek the kingdom of God, and all these things shall be added to you. Don't fear, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell what you have. Things will not be, the moth will not destroy, and your treasures, you don't need to worry about them disappearing. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. I think that there is a misunderstanding when we read that verse, that means that things will go perfectly for us, and that we'll have the best house on the street, and the fancy car in the garage. That's not what it means. It means that God will take care of us, that we need to be focusing on what is God leading us into. Where is he taking us? That doesn't mean that we won't starve. What it means is that God takes care of us. If we're Christians, We don't need to fear death because death just brings us to Christ. Now, if we're not Christ's, if we're not following Jesus, if we don't have a relationship, then do whatever you can here. Because this is all you got. The nations are right to seek after the things that will bring them pleasure, that will bring them temporary security. Because after this life, it's death. It says, do not fear, little flock. It's your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. And please don't misunderstand what I mean by this. In Christ, we are called to be sheep. There's a lot of things that says, oh, don't be a sheep and don't just follow. With Christ, we are called to follow. We are called to believe in him. We are called, really, to follow him blindly. I mean, he is calling us to that, to trust and to obey. Now, if it's the world system, no. Don't follow it blindly. Don't be a sheep in that instance. But when it's Christ, follow him, trust him, believe him. That's what he's calling. You say, well, but Lord, but if I do this, then this will happen, or I'll lose this thing, or I won't be able to take advantage of this opportunity. Jesus says, trust me. God says, trust me. I mean, do I have to explain that if I can clothe the lilies of the field, that I can take care of you? Do I have to explain that to you? John 16:30-31, I think that's the verse. I didn't write it down, but I believe that's the verse that talks about us having trouble. In this world, you will have trouble. Things are going to be hard and difficult. We are going to be called to make sacrifices, things happening that we don't want. But it says that Jesus has overcome the world. You don't need to desperately cling to your own plans. You don't need to fear loss. Because what God takes away, what we lose, is better for us. I don't know if some of you guys have seen the little quote that I have, you be you, but be the best you that you can be. We can only be the best us by following God's design for our lives. He made us and he wants the best for us. And he promises to give us the best. We just have to trust him and to seek him. And I think that we have had times in our lives where we heard God calling us to something. And we knew it was God, just like Jonah. We knew that it was God that was calling us. And maybe we even knew what would happen by us following him, by him leading us, and that it wouldn't be something that, in our own opinion, was what we wanted to do. Please trust God. Please follow him. Not because it's going to be better for you, but because you love God. Because he is true. Because sometimes we are called to do the things that may inflict pain on us. And honestly may cause us loss. And it's hard. I want to make a differentiation between, in one sense, yes, we want to do things for God because that's the best for us, but that's still us focusing on ourselves. I want the best for God. I want to do the things that he's calling us to do. And it's that phrase in Esther where I think it's Mordecai that says it, and he's like, you know, this could happen, or the advice, I forget how it goes, but he's saying that God will save his people, God will complete his plans, but if you don't want to be a part of it, he'll find somebody else. And I don't want that. I don't want to lose that opportunity to bless God, to be a part of his plan. He wants to use us. He doesn't have to use us. He doesn't need us. we were talking about yesterday about, you know, once he gets saved, why doesn't he just take us away? Why doesn't he just bring us into his kingdom and we'd have a lot less trouble? He wants to use us. He wants us to be a part of his plan. He wants us to see that joy in bringing people to Christ. But if you're not willing, if you keep pushing him away, if you keep ignoring what he's saying, if you keep trying to build your own future, your own security, he'll let you do that. But it's not going to turn out the way you want. Lord, I thank you so much for guiding us, for being there. I pray that we would be continually reminded to seek you. You are speaking to us. You are leading us. You are guiding us. You do forgive us. When we go off the path, you bring us back if we are willing. I just pray that we would be willing and we would see you leading us. Amen.